This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Over the past several months, the federal courthouse in Boston has been a busy place, the scene of several high-profile cases. Tariq Mahana, convicted of providing material support for al-Qaeda. Jahar Tsarnaev, arraigned for the Boston Marathon bombing attack. And of course, the case against James Whitey Bulger continues this week.
The three cases are very different from each other, but they share at least one thing in common. None of them have been televised. Instead, we rely on reporters in the courtroom to relay what happened, including what defendants looked like, their demeanor, whether they were at ease, angry, or agitated.
At Tsarnaev's hearing, for example, the Boston Globe said his jumpsuit was large, making him appear younger than his 19 years. In the Bulger case, our own David Boeri has told us how witnesses and lawyers spar with each other, how Bulger and key witnesses like Kevin Weeks erupted with anger and F-bombs.
But would it be better if we could see all of this for ourselves and draw our own conclusions? With so much public interest in these cases, there's renewed debate about whether federal court proceedings should be videotaped or even broadcast live. Proponents argue these are public proceedings paid for by the public, and so the public should be allowed to see them.
But opponents say cameras can turn a courtroom into a media circus. Just consider the O.J. Simpson trial. They say cameras encourage grandstanding and could even endanger witnesses and victims in some cases. So listeners, we want to hear from you. What do you think about this? Should court cases be televised? Based on the high-profile cases here in Boston and elsewhere, would that serve the justice system or hurt it? Let us know what you think. Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well at Radio Boston. And we're joined now by Nancy Gertner. She's a retired federal judge and a professor at Harvard Law School. She's in favor of allowing cameras into the courtroom. And Nancy Gertner, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Good to be here.
And also with us is David Olson. He's a professor at Boston College Law School. He has a different view. And David Olson, welcome to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's nice to be here.
Let's start with you, Nancy. Why do you think the court system would benefit from having cameras in the courtroom?
You know, I think it's a question of what public means. 200 years ago when the country was founded, public meant you had an open courtroom. Public today means screens, video. In the Tannenbaum case, which was the case involving a young man who was downloading songs, I thought that the public has a different definition, too, because this was a younger audience that does not read newspapers. And so the kinds of filtering that you're describing, they will not see. That so on the side of public now means video, audio, et cetera, but also on the side of the technology. It is so clear that the debate about cameras in the courtroom is an outdated debate when the camera was in the background whirring, you know, and was on a gigantic platform. What is significant about Bulger, Tsarnaev, and all of the cases you describe is that the courts streamed the video into an adjacent courtroom. The cameras were inconspicuous, and the streaming did no harm.
Into an adjacent courtroom where the rest of the press was watching.
That's right. And in fact, in the Prop 8 case in California, Judge Walker streamed the proceedings to courthouses around the country. Mm. If one can do that, what's the difference? Mm.
Well, David, let me come to you. Do the benefits outweigh the risks, or take on Nancy's question? What's the difference?
Yeah, I think the costs do outweigh the benefits, and I think there is risk. So on balance, you know, the benefit would be transparency, would be openness, would be trust in the legal system. And thank goodness in the U.S., we don't have real problems. The political institution most trusted are our federal courts, our courts. And I think, you know, if we introduce TVs into or TV television into the courtroom, we may really undermine that. As I was thinking about this, I came up with six reasons that I think it's a bad idea. And just to briefly list them, and I'm happy to chat about them in more detail. Number one is sensationalism, that TV is just different from anything else, from radio, from newsprint. There's that closely related. Number two is this soundbite culture. It hasn't been good for the legitimacy of Congress or even of the executive. And I think it would really could work to delegitimize courts in a way that wouldn't be healthy for our republic. Number three is just the disruption factor. And sure, that's changed in the 1965 Estes versus Texas case where the Supreme Court said the cameras were so disruptive that someone didn't have a fair trial. They were big honking cameras, and that's all changed. But there's still that disruption from the I'm on camera. I feel a little nervous right now being on the radio. If you point a camera on me, my level of anxiety would spike. Number four, intimidation. That can be of witnesses, jurors, and even parties. Number five, posturing by lawyers who are now playing to an audience other than the court and may have interests in promoting themselves that are divergent from their clients' interests. And number six, kind of a perversion of the legal system. We like lawyers to – our legal system works really well for – I think it's the best system in the world for getting to the truth of the matter and deciding things fairly on the law. So I don't think there's a reason to change that. And if we allow televisions in certain cases that are prone to it, you could have cases tried in the media as much as they're being tried at the time in the courtroom.
But and cases are being tried in the media. The notion that you can have reporters tweeting from the courtroom with, I would much rather have a video clip of some substance than how many characters are in a tweet. The other thing is that we have in virtually all the state courts across the country with cases that are far more sensational, far more dramatic than the, I hate to say it, boring fare of most federal court cases. There have been cameras in the courtroom without disruption, sensationalism. Also, the technology that we're talking about, which, for example, was in the Vaughn Walker's Prop 8 case, is where you can video it for later broadcast, for later streaming, so that if there's an issue of a witness that should not have been pictured, that can be addressed. If there's an objection that was made, that can be addressed. And then on the clips issue, the notion of sound bites, you know, what's interesting about the technology now is all court papers are online. And what they wanted to do with videos was simply to say, just as you have the transcript, you can click on this and get the whole trial. So the antidote for the two-minute soundbite is, wait a second, look at the entire testimony, which is not available to us now.
I want to encourage listeners to get in on this conversation. What do you think? Should court cases be televised based on the high-profile cases that you're seeing here in Boston? What do you think? We're engaged in a little bit of a debate here about this issue. 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Nancy, let me stick with you for a moment because David mentioned a list of things there. And one of the issues is this notion of protecting victims and witnesses in criminal cases. And one of the arguments we frequently hear against cameras in the courtroom is the chilling effect that they might have on some witnesses, particularly in criminal trials where there's a lot at stake.
Well, again, in the state court, you make a finding as a judge about whether it makes sense to do it in a particular case. If it's a child, if it is a reluctant witness, a reluctant victim witness, that would be different. But, you know, think about the Bulger case now for a moment. First, again, on a related point, the absence of cameras didn't stop the launching of, as you described it, F-bombs
right,
with some considerable frequency. And in addition, the victims were happily giving interviews outside the courtroom every day. So the answer is, yes, there are potential for problems, but public should mean public. Let me just say as a footnote, I've watched the documentary on the Pussy Riot group where they had a video of the proceedings in a Russian courtroom, and I found it extraordinary.
How so?
Well, first, that one could see justice at work, or not, as the case may be. And again, at a time when most people get their news on the internet and not in writing and to even a lesser degree on the radio, this is the way we communicate the legitimacy of our system.
So let me get David to respond to that. I think that's such an interesting point, this notion of the public seeing justice at work. And it seems to me that one of the important pillars of the criminal justice system is the public's confidence in it. Does this weaken the confidence, I guess, in it? Would it weaken the confidence?
Right. If we lived in another country where there really were problems with due process and with fairness in courts, then TV would be worth the cost because hopefully it would discipline that some. Luckily, we don't. And so while we have the Whitey Bulger trial where it's been years and years, decades since Whitey Bulger's had real power here, And therefore, witnesses are no longer intimidated. There are lots of other cases, especially if we're talking criminal, where I think there's much more reason to be against it. There's lots of cases where witnesses really would be intimidated, and there are websites out there kind of, you know, saying who's a rat and whatnot, where witnesses are being named right now, you can find on the internet, who are testifying. If that doesn't intimidate a witness, I don't know what would. I think with television, that fear, this, oh, court's televised, it's more public, would be greater. But I also think even if we just go over to a civil case, not criminal, we can have that same sort of intimidation or trial in the media to an extent with television clips that you just can't do without television clips. Hmm. A long time ago, I worked on a case where a young high school kid had a collision on a football field, terrible brain injury, a tragic case. They sued the manufacturer of the football helmet. The jury found a multi-million-dollar verdict for the plaintiff. And then on appeal, it was reversed because it turned out the helmet had been refurbished by someone else. There was just no legal grounds to uphold that verdict. And that, you know, that's how the court should work, dispassionately, coolly. The appellate court works to cool, you know, jury verdicts. But if we had a situation where when you have these kinds of trials, you can not only play towards the judge on what's the law, but you can say, let's make it so costly in the public relations realm for this company that they're going to fold anyway, I think that's a perversion of justice.
Well, let me ask you about that, Nancy. I think this is related to that, and that is the O.J. Simpson case is often brought up as this example of the sort of circus atmosphere that was allowed to get out of control because of this very, very sort of TV-oriented case, it seemed to
right.
be. What's your response to that, about this concern about the TV cameras foster that sort of circus atmosphere?
First, that was a judge who did not know how to control the proceeding. And the judge not knowing how to control the proceeding can happen at any time. Second, again, we have 40 years of experience in the state courts with the potential for intimidating witnesses, et cetera, and they have addressed these issues, and you balance in an individual case. Also, it's very interesting. At the time of the O.J. Simpson case, you could reasonably talk about doing what you can to avoid trial in the media. That is an illusion today. Hmm. It's a question of what kind of trial in the media.
What do you mean it's an illusion? You mean that the trial actually doesn't take place in the media if cameras are allowed in the court?
No, what I'm saying is there's the amount of coverage of high-profile cases is extraordinary. 24/7 news coverage, the Casey Anthony case. Which is it better to have 24/7 loop of someone's caricature of what I did in court rather than a clip of what I did in court? Mm-hmm. I have to admit that as a judge for 17 years, sometimes I would read, I won't mention the newspapers, but sometimes I would read someone's account of what went on in the courtroom, and it was clear they didn't have a clue of what had gone on. They had no idea. They were surprised by a verdict that no one who had actually sat through the trial was surprised about. So the bottom line is that the issues with respect to cameras have been worked out in state court with murder and rape and child abuse cases, et cetera. And the notion that the federal court can stand back and say, well, I don't think we know enough, just doesn't make any sense. We will have trials in the media, 24/7 news coverage. Better to have more information that is accurate than not. And as to the point about the legitimacy of the proceeding, man, I would have loved to have had people. This is a little bit narcissistic comment. I would have loved to have people in my courtroom to hear what we did, how we instructed a jury, the care and the attention that was paid to the proceeding. That would be a great thing to do.
David.
If I might respectfully disagree, Judge Gertner, I don't think anybody would have ever heard these careful instructions because that's not the sort of thing cable news is going to be interested in. That maybe a soundbite here or there. So, and also I don't think the last 40 years of the experiment has been, I don't think we can say it's working well. The prominent cases do turn into circuses and sensationalisms. I do think it's actually better to have someone else characterizing the words rather than a viewer to see that little snippet of testimony live. Why? That doesn't seem to make sense at first, but I'll tell you why. I think there's a salience and a power to television that you don't have in any other form of media. So I watched one part of the Zimmerman trial, and I thought the prosecution's case was much stronger than it ultimately was. Well, I went back and
this
I did
This is the Stand Your Ground trial in Florida, George Zimmerman, right,
absolutely.
Trayvon Martin murder
Trayvon
case.
Martin, right?
Yep.
I watched part of the prosecution's closing, and then I went back and watched the defense. And, oh, the prosecution wasn't nearly so powerful. But when we see something, we form this opinion. I see one of the witnesses. I don't see a witness on the other side. Suddenly, I think I know something about it in a way that if I'm just getting a snippet reported from someone else, I know in my experience, well, I need to take that with a grain of salt.
But, Professor, why does that matter in the end? I mean, in other words, if I'm viewing it and I form my own opinion, it's still going to be up to the jury who has to sit through everything and get all those instructions from the judge that might or might not be televised. What does it matter if I get it a little bit wrong? It seems like I've got a better chance of getting it more right if I can see it all.
So that's a great question, but I disagree you have a better chance. I mean, look at the Zimmerman trial itself. Judge Gertner mentioned people who are in the courtroom and then were surprised by outcomes of trials. People who watched the Zimmerman case, I think, especially on some cable TV shows, were shocked that Zimmerman was acquitted when I think most reasonable legal experts thought it was an overcharged case and he was going to be found not guilty because the state just didn't have the evidence. And now since then, we've had a lot of public passion. Thank God we didn't have riots, but it's not impossible that we could have. And would this have been a big case no matter what? Yes. But would it have, you know, with being able to have those daily clips, that was a real problem.
Let's take a couple of calls. James is on the line from Somerville. Hi, James, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I guess I have 2 points that fall under the same umbrella dealing with the independence and the impartiality of our judiciary system, which I think is what makes it unique to all the world. As an attorney, I do a lot of international development work all over the world and have experience with courts everywhere. And, Professor, you're absolutely right that ours is probably the best. But my point, first of all, Professor, I think you're absolutely right that having cameras would affect the behavior of the actors in the courts. And I'm thinking particularly of lawyers who would go from thinking of focusing only on the instant matter thinking, gosh, if I say this, that's going to look bad, even though it's the right thing to do for my client, and that's going to affect my ability to get more clients in the future.
James, I'm going to stop you right there just because our time is really running down, and you've put a really good point on the table that I want both of our guests to answer to, so I thank you for the call. And Nancy, respond to James's concern.
I tried cases as a lawyer with cameras in the courtroom, and the answer is within a minute and a half, you forget that they're there. And that's particularly the case given the technology. There's also another reason for cameras that have not been brought out, which is the media. It's one thing to say the Tsarnaev case and the Bulger case are being covered. Very few newspapers or radio stations have stringers who follow the courts every day. Wouldn't it be better if they could be in their offices, click on the court website, and see the proceedings in the case that they're following? Wouldn't it inform coverage more than it ever had? And as I said, we're getting caricature and snippets now. The thoughtful public will know that if they don't think that this is the appropriate spin, they can go online and click on the entire proceeding. And wouldn't that be a much more informed public?
Hmm. David, do you want to respond to that?
I mean, I would love it if that's the way that, you know, the public reacted. They went and read the full transcript or something. But I just don't think it's reality. And maybe you forget cameras are there when the case isn't then re-televised on the cable news at night. But I think if you're on news every night, you would not forget the cameras are there.
Nancy, what about another concern that I was reading about before we went on the air today? And that is, and I think David sort of alluded to this, and that is the sort of voyeuristic nature of cameras. And that might be at the expense of defendants who might well turn out to be innocent. And by showing a defendant on TV for over a long period of time, the public might reach the wrong conclusion about him or her.
There's no question that when anyone watches a proceeding who isn't physically in the courtroom, you get a different view of it. And I guess my point is that the different view of it is at least more informed than the view they're getting now. There's this wonderful moment in 12 Angry Men where one of the jurors in the movie describes how he's moved. Someone said that they ran down the stairs, and then he said, wait a second, the old man who said he ran, did you see how he walked to the court, to the stand? He was limping. So there's no question that people inside the courtroom get a view sort of 360 degrees in the way that someone who's watching it on the screen does not. But it's better than the caricature on the evening news.
Well, it's a really interesting conversation, and thank you both for sort of launching this debate, or I guess I should say continuing this debate. I don't think we're going to solve it today, but thank you both for coming in and doing it. Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge. She's also a professor at Harvard Law School. Thanks so much. I appreciate
it. Thank
you. And David Olson, professor at Boston College Law School. Thank you very much, David
Olson. My pleasure.
And listeners, this conversation continues at RadioBoston.org. Please post your comments there. And stay with us. Coming up, singer-songwriter Margaret Glaspie, live in our studio. I'm Anthony Brooks with Carrie Goldberg. This is Radio Boston.